No true Hawaiian will evade it. That was the headline of a two-page newspaper ad penned by Queen Liliuokalani and Prince Jonah Kuhiokalani-Aniole in 1914. They were encouraging residents of territorial Hawaii to donate to the Red Cross following America's entry into World War I. Despite being annexed by the United States only 19 years earlier, people in Hawaii embraced the war effort. Thousands volunteered for service in the military and on the home front. Queen Liliuokalani led a territory-wide drive to knit wool socks and bandages. The largest mobilization of the Hawaii National Guard in history was also called. By the end of fighting in 1918, more than 100 people from Hawaii had been killed in the Great War. Shooting stopped on November 11, 1918, on what became known as Armistice Day and is now Veterans Day in the U.S. This Sunday is the 100th anniversary of the World War I armistice, and commemorations of that truce are being held across the nation. Hawaii's celebration will be taking place at the War Memorial Auditorium in Waikiki. Ahead of that ceremony, a 100th anniversary plaque was unveiled. HPR's Ryan Finnerty was there and spoke with retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Curtis Manny Manchester. He was part of the Hawaii World War I Centennial Task Force and shared some of Hawaii's little-known history in the Great War.
It's really one of the untold, unknown stories of the war, although there's a book on it by Dr. Kuykendall that people can look up. We had almost 10,000 soldiers, sailors, and Marines from Hawaii that served in the First World War. Six of the first casualties in the war were aboard the SS Aztec, and they were from Hawaii. It was torpedoed by a Imperial German Navy U-boat off the coast of France delivering supplies to the war effort there. So our experience started very early. There were German Imperial Navy ships that were interned here in Hawaii, and German sailors were held prisoner here. There was believed to have been possibly a little bit of espionage activity here, which is interesting. And it's also part of a war where, you know, our allies were a little different from World War II. For example, the coasts and harbors of Hawaii were protected by the Imperial Japanese Navy, which was one of our allies, while the U.S. Navy sent many of its ships to the Atlantic Ocean. So it's very important to remember that. Citizens of Hawaii as individuals made huge efforts in the war. The police and the fire department had a competition to see who could knit the most socks and scarves for soldiers at the front. The citizens were all in. They tried to stop the use of wheat flour in Hawaii, and they went to banana flour to save bread for the troops. There was an enormous amount of attempts to conserve for the war effort here, metal drives. People were really interested in helping people of all different, you know, the local ethnic groups that we have here in Hawaii. Everybody chipped in. People were joining the armed forces. It was a very spectacular time to be here. There was a lot of concern that the war might come to Hawaii's shores. There were German raiders, Imperial German Navy raiders in the Pacific. There was a climate that just, you know, it's hard to imagine now. Also that much of the U.S. Navy had gone to the Atlantic, so we weren't this huge naval power in the Pacific. So that also made people a little nervous, and it was good to have the allies that we did that were looking out for us here.
And as I understand it, Hawaii had one of the highest rates of volunteerism during the conflict, which is really amazing considering that most of the people living in Hawaii hadn't been Americans for that long.
Right. It only for, 19 years? That many people that enlisted were first or second generation, you know, whether they were from parts of Asia or parts of Europe. You had Portuguese, Japanese, Filipino, Chinese and people from the mainland U.S. that had moved here, all, you know, chipping in this event. If you look at some of our vintage photographs that we have up on the natatorium by the gates, you can see the soldiers lined up with flower leis and silky leis of the period. And you'll see it looks like the people I went to public school with here in Hawaii, you know. It's everybody all in.
Everywhere in the country, World War I doesn't really get as much space in the consciousness of most Americans as, say, World War II or Vietnam. Why do you think that is?
Well, Douglas MacArthur said, you know, old soldiers never die. They just slowly fade away. And we have a lot of Civil War reenactments and a lot of Revolutionary War reenactments. There are people like me that do more living history, but we also didn't have the battlefields here, so we don't have the huge battlefield monuments of the Civil War or the Revolutionary War. World War II, we still have living veterans with us. People my age and people of every age grew up with probably somebody around them that went to war in World War II. I knew a few World War I veterans. My Uncle Al worked as an aviation mechanic in World War I, fixing Sopwith Camels and Spads. And they used to make the mechanics fly in the aircraft to make sure it was fixed correctly. But some of these planes were one-seaters, so you either sat on the pilot's lap or on the wing of the plane. And this was such a terror to him, he never set foot in a plane after 1919. And he passed away in the 1980s. So you could see the experiences of war, and you would think, oh, a mechanic, that's a safe job. He never got it. But that experience so traumatized him, he didn't. Another of my great uncles, Hugh Manchester, he has a Facebook site if you look. He was killed in one of the engagements leading up to the Second Battle of the Marne, one of the last battles that ended the war. And his side of my family still have flowers put on his grave every year on his birthday and the day of his death, and sometimes Memorial Day. And there's services at the World War I cemeteries in Europe that will do this for Americans. And in Europe, in the Netherlands and Belgium and France, school children go and decorate the graves of American soldiers near the battlefields there. So it's one that it's not completely forgotten. There are many people who still keep with it that history of that period. But it was also very, very traumatic war, trench warfare. And then you had simultaneously the Spanish influenza epidemic that ravaged the whole world. So it was a period many people even that went through it wanted to forget and get on with their lives, as so many of us as veterans do. And some of us want to commemorate the sacrifices and go on and try to help other people understand, educate ourselves and others. I think understanding war and military service better can help us both be prepared for war, and I hope sincerely to avoid unnecessary wars in our future.
And so how important do you think ceremonies like this one are to remember the wars of the past?
I think they're very important. We've had a lot of people come up today and talk. I talked to the colonel here, Colonel Tafal, from the U.S. Army Reserve. He and I served in the same infantry battalion together. So we have a chance to have a little camaraderie and share stories and comrades that we served with. These are important for us as veterans, as individuals. I've gotten the chance to talk to many people here and share some of the histories that I've learned from our task force historian and others, and they're times to. This is a smaller ceremony, so it's focused on this plaque unveiling. There's a very big ceremony that we're going to have on November 11th. I'd really encourage everybody to come out for it. It's a chance, I think, when you come to these events, particularly the big events like the one on November 11th, for parents to talk to their children. And for veterans to talk to their family members about things they might not normally talk about. I go to some of my friends' family parties, and they're fathers or mothers or grandparents will talk to me about things, because I'm a combat veteran, that my friends never knew at all, because they feel I'll understand or they feel a sense of camaraderie with me. And my friends will always say, you know, talk to my dad. We don't know anything about what he did during the war. And they'll find out, you know, that one of my friends found out, you know, her dad was part of the military intelligence service in World War II, and that he'd volunteered, like a lot of local Japanese Nisei, to serve. And they just sent him to the intelligence course thinking he must speak Japanese, but he didn't. So he told the guys from the mainland, well, you know how our family works. I cannot be sent back home in disgrace. So all of the Nisei guys from the mainland who were internment camps sat there all night long after they studied and taught him Japanese. You know, and these are things that come out when veterans start to talk about their experience. Again, his family, they knew he'd served, but really knew nothing about it. And I think these kinds of events, they can sort of be catalysts for that kind of discussion, sometimes just looking at people's faces. On the 11th, we're going to have a museum. The Hawaii Historic Arms Association and some other are going to have relics from World War I, some material objects that people can see. They're going to have people dressed up in World War I uniforms, like myself, men and women, talking about the different roles that people played. And it's a chance. We're also going to have a veteran service organizations tent, where we're going to have multiple veterans organizations. People can come talk to a veteran. Veterans can come and find about what our veterans organizations do in our communities and for our communities and for one another. And we hope maybe we get some people to join. We'll also be handing out poppies, which is the, if anyone ever heard the poem on Flanders Field, it's a very touching poem written by an officer after his chaplain died in the trenches in World War I, and he is at the gravesite seeing all the poppy flowers. So in the poppy flower has become a symbol of veterans, and particularly those that we've lost in war, because it was one of the first flowers to grow up in the trenches of World War I.
And where will the ceremony be on the 11th?
Ceremony will be right here in the Peace Park, which is between Kapi'olani Park and the Hawaii War Natatorium. So if you just go to the War Natatorium, you'll see the big tent and everything there. We're going to have, check online, we're going to have parking set up on the other side of Diamond Head. I don't want to say anything because it keeps changing a little bit. And then there'll be trams to come down here if people can't find parking in the immediate area. And there'll be events from 6 a.m. in the morning to 9 o'clock at night. 6 a.m. starts with bagpipers. Around the world, bagpipers are going to be playing at sunrise to commemorate the signing of the armistice that led 5 hours later to the guns ceasing on the Western Front.
A ceremony marking the 100th anniversary of the World War I armistice again will be held this Sunday at Waikiki's War Memorial Natatorium. The event is free and open to the public, and again begins with a sunrise bagpipe ceremony at 6 a.m. Find the details at HawaiiWorldWar1.org.